I'd like to introduce Donna DiMaggio-Berger, a partner with Becker & Polykoff. She's been focusing on community association law for, Donna, shall we say something around 2 decades? I don't want to date you too much in front of our huge listening audience.
Tread lightly, Dan. Thanks for having me. Yes, I think 2 decades would be accurate.
All right. Well, seriously, Donna is a leading expert in the field, having obtained the prestigious College of Community Association Lawyers designation from CAI, among several distinguished credentials. Also, as an expert technologist, I think I may have made up that word there, blogger, social media pioneer, as that medium can be used by and for a community association. So without further ado, from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, we welcome Donna DiMaggio-Berger to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dan, and you seem to be doing well even without your co-captain.
Well, thank you. We've got a little bit of practice here, and of course, I do have my extraordinary engineer, producer Eric, who weighs in as well. He's been along for the ride. So I hope you enjoyed some of the music there, a little theme of Florida with Jimmy Buffett.
I did. You set the tone very appropriately.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for agreeing to join us here on Condo and HOA Buzz. I'm sure you've heard all about our show all the way out in Fort Lauderdale.
You know that's all they talk about down here?
Oh, that's great.
They say, why can't we have Dan and Duncan down here?
That's where all our listeners are. That's wonderful.
Would you guys consider relocating?
Well, I don't know about relocating, but I think a remote from Fort Lauderdale, maybe in February or March, I'll run it by Duncan. That might be a fabulous
idea. Just don't
come
during hurricane season, which is 6 months of the year.
Oh, okay. It sounds like our winter, like 9 months. Oh, well, Donna, we'd like to ask our guests one of the first question. How did you get into the HOA, the Homeowner Association, Community Association field?
That is a very interesting story because I did not go consciously into this field, and I always like to say I don't know many law students who say, you know, I think I want to be a condo lawyer.
I know that wasn't me.
Was that you?
No, I said that was not me. Yep.
So out of law school, I was a transactional attorney, corporate, and focused on banking law. And then I had my first child, my son Ryan, and I no longer wanted to drive and commute down to downtown Miami. And one day I got a letter in the mail from Becker and Polykoff and said, hey, we've got a flex time program. Would you like to come in and interview? And I did. And then I found out when I was interviewing that it was to be a condominium and HOA attorney, which I had never even lived in a condo or an HOA. And I said, how hard can it be? Famous last words. How hard can it be? I'll read the statute.
Sure.
And 20 years later, here I am.
Wow. Now, has your practice evolved? I mean, obviously, you've become more sophisticated. You've gotten into the details. But as far as
I've read
type
a declaration
practice,
or two since then.
I bet. Well, now that the intro's over, our listeners know you a little bit, I'd like to start our discussion with trends. Are there current trends you're seeing in the industry, either around Florida or more nationally, because I know you are tuned into what's going on around the country.
Well, yeah, and our firm has offices in different states. We're in New York and New Jersey and Virginia and D.C. and expanding. So yeah, we really do take an eye towards the national trends in this area. There are a couple trends. I would say board member education is a big one. You know, once upon a time, that was sort of a dirty word. Directors didn't really see the benefit in going to classes. I think you'd probably have to put a gun to their head to get them to show up at a class. And, you know, we held more than 272 classes last year, and, you know, they were packed with board members. Many times, you know, we have a certification requirement in Florida where you either have to take a course or you have to certify that you've read and understand your documents. But many of these directors will come to classes well after they've met the certification requirement, and they do it because they want to learn best practices. And I think the trend is that, you know, people are really starting to take the job of being a volunteer director a little more seriously, and they understand that they have a fiduciary obligation to the members in their community. So that would be one trend. And another trend, and this is another positive trend, I'm seeing all positive trends, would be the move towards fully funding reserves. And again, that may be because particularly in Florida, and I would imagine in some of the other Sun Belt states, we are trending demographically a younger board member, and we are seeing people get serious with funding those reserves as opposed to waiving them every year.
That's good to know, and it's a great tease you had on the education, because actually in our second segment, in about 10 minutes, I'm going to ask you some questions about the board member education, because I know you've got a lot of experience with that, as you just referenced. I didn't realize, wow, 272 classes last year. So we'll definitely get into a little bit more detail of that in our next segment. But, yeah, touching base here on the fully funding reserves. In Washington here, and in Oregon, I also practice, there's no requirement to fund a specific level. There's some disclosure laws that are in place in the event that associations don't and what they do fund. Is Florida the same, so there's no statutory requirement and it's up to the discretion of the homeowners themselves?
That's correct. You know, our legislators have tossed around the idea of mandating reserves, and that's been defeated. And I believe rightfully so. I believe each community should have the ability to decide for themselves, do we want to waive funds, do we want to partially fund, or do we want to fully fund? Now, we also, like your state, we have a disclaimer requirement that, you know, on the voting ballot and proxy, it will say if you waive reserves, you may be subject to a special assessment. And that's fair, too. I mean, people should be making informed decisions and casting an informed vote, knowing that if we don't save for a rainy day for the roof or the painting or the paving, we could be hit with a big special assessment.
Sure. So what do you attribute? I mean, you mentioned that the younger demographic. So how does that play out if you have a younger demographic that are in charge of these associations or members? The younger people are more
I think they see the potential of enjoying the fruits of the reserve. And by that, I mean, we do sometimes call it the green banana crowd, who typically waived reserves because they thought, well, I could be putting this away for 10 years, but I may not live to see it. So, I'm not going to do it. I think that the younger demographic is, I'm making an investment. This is my home. Another aspect of this, Dan, is the FHA certification. I don't know in Washington how forefront this is, but in Florida, it's quite big right now. And the communities that have gotten FHA certification certainly enjoy a larger financing options than those that haven't. And one of the components of that is fully funded reserves.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point there. The same is here, Don, on FHA certification. You're listening to Condo and HOA Buzz with Duncan and Dan, though I'm flying solo this afternoon. And with us from Fort Lauderdale is Donna DiMaggio-Berger, a partner with Becker and Polykoff, and I dare say a leading expert in the field here. I know, Donna, we'll talk about it next segment, but a lot of work you've done blogging and really getting a lot of information out there and keeping your finger on the pulse. So thanks again for joining us.
Well, thank you, Dan.
What about trends? Anything moving away from, you know, the craters and fallout of the Great Recession, and now that associations feel a little bit more confident, have a little bit more money in the coffers? Are you seeing any trends along those lines?
Oh, absolutely. Now that, you know, the pressing concern is not, are we going to have money to pay our bills each month? People are, you know, associations are looking for those, you know, long delayed capital improvement projects. So we're seeing a lot of associations that are undertaking not only necessary maintenance and repair projects, but also improvement projects and thinking about the things they've been wanting to do. We're also seeing associations now that, again, delinquencies and foreclosures are not the biggest to-do item on their list. They're looking at those document rewrite projects, things that, you know, have documents that haven't been touched in years. So it's that's another positive trend that most associations have some breathing room where they can tackle these kind of projects where before they were very much focused on collecting assessments.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. That's our experience out here as well. You know, I noticed one trend as the economy really started to tank and the associations found themselves in, you know, financial distress. It seemed that prior to that, so, you know, prior to 2008, I haven't been in the industry quite as long as you have, but several years before that, sometimes it was difficult to get boards to actually enforce their documents, enforce their collections policies, because they didn't want to, you know, offend their neighbors. That's people we live with. But they more or less were forced to when the economy shifted. Do you think that we might go back to that period of time where association boards aren't as strict enforcement? I mean, I hope not, but what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't think so, Dan. I think that was a real the Great Recession was a real eye-opening experience. I mean, we saw some associations, particularly the ones with high investor percentages, investor owner percentages, they were on the very brink of survival. They had 80, 90% delinquencies. And even those that just, you know, the very, very stable, upscale communities that went from 0 or 1% delinquency to 5, you know, that was catastrophic in their opinion. So I really do think that they're not going to roll it back. And to be truthful with you, many of these communities amended their documents to tighten up their collection policy. So if they were, you know, inclined to roll back a little bit, it would require them to either A, ignore their documents, which is never advisable, or B, amend them.
Yeah, great point. We saw the same here. In fact, we did a lot of collections policies. And, you know, although, of course, you're trying to make it as uniform as possible, I mean, there's usually going to be some discretion. It's not just completely boilerplate of, you know, shalls across the board. So there should still be some discretion. But I agree with you. Putting that down in protocols and formal procedures is the best way to continue that consistency.
Of course. I mean, there needs to be a human element. We're dealing with neighbors and humans, and there are issues. And we always encourage boards, and I'm sure you do too, to find out first what's the problem. Is it that someone can't pay you or somebody won't pay you because they haven't prioritized the association's assessment? And believe it or not, I've been at meetings where I've had a member stand up, and it was a real estate agent, and say, well, you know, if it's Homestead, the association can't foreclose. And that is often the misinformation. So when they're looking at the Macy's bill or the HOA assessment and they think, well, the HOA can't foreclose, I'm going to pay the Macy's bill first, that's where the education comes in.
Right. Well, once again, a great tease, and we're almost at the second segment where we can get into education, but we've got about a minute to go, and I wanted to ask you your thoughts on a move away from the corporate governance model to maybe a more grassroots model for the layperson, volunteer, you know, community association boards. Have you heard any of that or any thoughts on that?
Well, there's always been a lot of discussion down here, you know, because Florida has some of the oldest and unfortunately most bloated shared ownership statutes. So our Condominium Act is well over 120 pages. Our HOA statute is growing every year, cooperative as well. We've talked about having a Uniform Ownership Interest Act and whether or not having one act for all of the different types of shared ownership communities and drafted in a way that is easily understandable instead of the add-ons that we've had over 40 years would make sense. And I think that's, you know, that could be the starting point to what you're suggesting, which is a little bit of clarity.
Yep. Well, it's Donna, we have not scripted this for our listeners, but that's actually a great intro. My last guest here, the last segment coming on about 45 after, is one of my partners, Jeremy Stilwell, and we're going to be talking exactly about UKIOWA, the Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act that's going through the Washington legislature. So, yeah, we'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. But to this point, I really appreciate the discussion. It's been terrific. Time's flown by here in the first segment. But stay tuned for our next segment with Donna as we discuss board member education, how technology affects and enables community associations. You're listening to Condo and HOA Buzz, KKNW Alternative Talk Radio, 1150 a.m.
He says he'll catch some blackbirds away. He will fly away to heaven from some sweet blue vining spring.
He walked through springtime.
Builders Millwork Supply is a leading supplier of doors, windows, cabinets, moldings, and more. Whether you're a general contractor, home remodel, or a do-it-yourselfer, Builders Millwork Supply is your local choice for quality products that can be tailored to meet your needs. Check our website at buildersmillwork.com or visit our showroom and see how our products can work for you.
Looking for the best insurance and premiums for your home, auto, toys, and more? Then call Hub International at 425-489-4500. As one of the largest independent agents in the country, let them design an insurance program to meet your needs and budget. That's Hub International at 425-489-4500. And mention you heard this on Condo and HOA Buzz.
Is your condominium complex beginning to show its age? Are you planning construction repairs or full-scale remediation on your condominium buildings? J2 Building Consultants specializes in design and construction management for condominiums. J2 will work in collaboration with your board members to develop the right construction strategies and to create designs that will add value to your property. With J2, your project will be delivered on time and within budget. Call 425-774-5600 to speak with one of J2's construction experts and receive a free estimate for design and construction management. Again, call 425-774-5600 to begin the exciting process of repairing and updating your aging buildings.
Does your condominium association have leaky or obsolete windows, roofs, or decks? If so, let the experts at Kilburn Architects design a repair that improves your building or managed property. With over 17 years experience assisting homeowners in the Puget Sound region, from townhouses to mid-rise structures, Kilburn Architects has a proven track record of success at increasing property values. Todd Kilburn and his team can be reached at 206-682-5211 or on the web at kilburnarchitects.com.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. It's Lieutenant Dan in studio, and my co-host Captain Kirk is offline the Enterprise down in Southern California. Listening to Condo and HOA Buzz, all things, everything related to condominium and homeowner associations. Left off about 2 minutes ago speaking with Donna DiMaggio-Berger, industry expert, Florida attorney. In the last segment, we discussed national trends. Donna, I'd like to ask some questions really focusing on your expertise in board member education and technology. You've done quite a bit of education. In fact, in the first segment, you mentioned 272 classes last year, your firm. What have you found to be most effective, and how do you get board members to actually attend?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, those 272 classes were held throughout the state of Florida in our various offices and various venues, and we offer more than three dozen courses. I think the hook for most board members is a topic. You know, as I said, in Florida, we have a certification requirement. And fortunately, many, many directors, rather than signing a slip of paper saying they've read and will, you know, uphold and understand their governing documents, they really want to check the second option, which is attending a state-certified course. So we do have courses to certify homeowners association directors, cooperative, and condominium directors. But beyond that, we also drill down, and we have classes related. I mean, one of our most popular classes is Condo Construction Projects Gone Wild. And you and I spoke in the previous segment about the fact that many communities are now looking to undertake material and capital improvement projects because they're a lot healthier financially. But you have to make sure that those things don't get crazy. So that class is always a good one. We've got a prescription. I'm sure you've heard about the emotional support animals.
And, oh, yeah.
In the service animals, that's always a big topic, so that's a popular class. We even have a class on an anatomy of a water leak, which is for most directors and managers, it's confounding to deal with these leaks in high rises. You know, who pays for it? How did it start? How do we fix it? And, I'm doing a course. We come up with courses all the time. We survey people who come to our classes, directors. We say, what do you want us? You know, did we not cover something that you'd like to see covered? And in response to that, I am teaching a course called Becoming a Smoke-Free Community. So that's a big issue, too, lately, secondhand smoke in multifamily buildings.
Right. Well, it sounds like each of the topics that you mentioned are similar. It must be, you know, national, because we face those and address those as well. It seems to be the demand for homeowners out here. But I'm wondering, you mentioned about the law in Florida. When did that pass, and how did that get passed? I would have thought maybe there'd be some opposition of mandatory education for volunteer homeowners.
Well, it was an evolution, Dan, and it was passed several years ago for condominium directors, and then in subsequent years it was passed for homeowners association directors and cooperatives. But it's not mandatory education.
Okay.
That was something that was a proposal that was discussed, and it was defeated. They do have the directors do have the option to either take a course or sign a certification that they've read and will uphold the governing documents. So, you know, but there are people even now who say, it should be mandatory. And again, the trend is most directors are coming to these classes anyhow because they really like the benefit of the shared wisdom, talking to other directors, hearing their war stories, sharing resources, talking about vendors they're considering hiring. I mean, it is an experience. And we like, you talked about how do you get them out there. We like to keep our classes small. We don't do a giant, you know, college lecture type of course. What we like to do is get directors, and I just had a class last night, around a conference room table where they can all talk to each other, where they can be heard, where they can ask their questions, where they're not talked at, where we're talking with them.
Sure.
And, of course, it helps to feed them.
Oh, of course. Yep. Food and a little drink, maybe an adult beverage if possible. What about resources in addition to the classes? I know out here in Washington, we've got a very strong chapter of CAI, Community Association Institute. So there's a lot of education. There's a lot of resources that we rely upon here in CAI. But what about in your state and in your area?
Well, the same thing. CAI has some fantastic resources. A lot of the law firms in this industry produce very good materials. The state, the Division of Condominiums, produces a lot of very useful resources, and they teach. But, you know, you mentioned the social media, which is my, I don't want to say it's a hobby, but it's a passion of sorts. And there is a disturbing trend. That's the only first disturbing trend I'm going to mention, is the fact that, you know, as lawyers, you and I and our colleagues, we are no longer solely the gatekeepers of information. You know, people can go online and Google, you know, what constitutes a quorum, or how do I, you know, a proxy, and that is becoming more and more of a problem. You know, yes, we've come out of the Great Recession, but I'm sure you would agree that people are still very cost conscious, sometimes in ways that are not entirely advisable. And so people will go on LinkedIn and Facebook, and they'll send out these queries about things that are really important in their communities, and they're really shopping for a legal opinion. And I can't tell you the number of times I've seen non-lawyers giving legal opinions, lawyers in other jurisdictions giving legal opinions when they don't know the state law. And it's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found also sometimes you know, newer managers may be contributing to that as well without the because once again, you mentioned that it's the bottom line that associations are so conscious about, and they don't want to, you know, have to pay legal costs, though. It's that old commercial, that Fram filter, I think, pay me now or pay me later.
You took the words right out of my mouth, because don't pay for that legal opinion now. Take that free advice, follow that path, wind up sued, and then you will pay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and, you know, look, that doesn't always happen, but if it's something significant, you should reach out to your own association attorney and get a proper opinion.
Yep, I hope that doesn't sound too self-serving, as we've got two lawyers out here talking. But
well, we didn't say you have to hire us.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. So what about other social media? I mean, you're a big blogger. You've got great information out there. But what about from the perspective of an association board, using social media either as a communication device within, you know, the homeowners themselves or within boards? I mean, we're always fighting the fight with boards, telling them, hey, you shouldn't be conducting any business outside of a meeting. And I know, you know, there's emails, but what's your experience with advising or assisting boards with respect to social media on behalf of the association?
It's a great question, and there are pros and cons. I mean, social media is ubiquitous. Does anybody really talk in person anymore? Do people just send email and text? So we have to be aware of the fact that this is how people communicate. And so social media, having a Facebook page for your association, having an association website, these are important things, particularly for people who are assessing your community, even for lenders who are looking at your community. Should you want to have a loan, they want to see how stable, how viable the community is. Now, the downside to that is that a lot of boards are communicating in these various social media channels without having any sort of policy or protocol in place. You know, last night I asked every manager and board member around the table, I said, who has an email policy? Because in Florida, we just amended the statute to acknowledge that board members can communicate via email. They just can't take votes. And not a hand went up. And my question to the board, to the directors present was, if you get an email directed to all seven of you, who responds?
Uh-huh. What was
all
the answer?
Seven?
Yeah.
What if four write one thing back and three write another? What if nobody writes back because they all assume somebody else wrote back? So you need that policy. And when it comes to social media and potential litigation going on in your community, let's say you're suing a developer for a construction defect, but you have a director who is posting things on their Facebook page that is going to destroy your litigation strategy or potentially destroy it.
Sure. That and any other type of, you know, potentially, you know, privileged or sensitive, if not. What about posting or having a website that has, you know, potentially some sensitive information on that? You've come across associations that do that as well?
I would say that every association needs to secure their URL. So if you are Island Club Condominium, you will probably want to go out and get www.islandclubcondo.com. Because if you don't, somebody else can. And I've actually used this as an example. One of the communities I know, renters who formerly lived in the community and had a very bad experience with their board went out. They found that the association had never set up a website or secured their URL. They did it. And it is a pretty shocking website that they created. You know, everything from Mr. Rogers photos to very negative imagery and statements made about the board. So the first thing the association, whether they're going to use it or not, buy your own URL. It doesn't cost much to maintain that each year. And when you're ready to use a website, when you want to set up a website, make sure you have it, you know, with the proper protocols in place again, the proper passwords. And again, you can have a password protected portion of your website where you can post your budgets, your minutes, and anything that's sensitive, and leave the other portions of the site open to potential purchasers to show them how, you know, great your community is.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point, Donna, in that if a website's going to be hijacked by a disgruntled owner, it's certainly not going to be anything positive. So it's I've seen some pretty malicious and you know, borderline
chances are
slanders.
They're not creating a fan site, right?
Exactly. Well, we always we're actually coming up against the end of the segment here. Amazing. But before we close out the segment, we always like to ask our guests if they've got a favorite story about working within the community association industry, you know, the funnier or more outrageous, the better. So I'm sure you probably have a litany of them, but if you've got one you could share with our listeners, that'd be great.
Well, I'll tell you the first and funniest story was my first experience with a condominium association, and that is right out of law school. And I had just gotten married, and we decided to move into a townhouse community where we had friends living. And, of course, we didn't know anything. We hadn't read the documents before I became an association attorney. And we were going to meet the board president, and he met us in the clubhouse all by himself. And we walked in, and he looked at my husband and I, and we were both two 20-somethings, young 20-somethings, and he said, looked us right in the eye, and he said, if I like you, you're in, and if I don't like you, you're not. And we looked at each other, and we were like, we really hope he likes us. Now, of course, we would know, okay, wait, this guy has no ability to be saying this. Come to find out later, there wasn't even an approval procedure in the documents.
No kidding.
So we went through this whole, you know, traumatizing experience that wasn't even authorized in the documents, which I still use to this day, Dan, to tell people, please read your documents.
That's a great anecdote. Well, thank you, Donna. Really, really appreciate our short time here together. I'm sure you'll have a great time next week at the CAI Legal Convention in San Francisco. So definitely look forward to seeing you in person when our paths cross professionally again.
Thank you. Me too. I had a lot of fun. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Safe travels. For our listeners, you're listening to Condo and HOA Buzz. Stay tuned as we shift gears in our final segment to talk Ukiowa. What is it and why is it important? Stay tuned.
The plane brought me farther. I'm surrounded by water and I'm not going back again. I got my toes in the water, ass in the sand. Not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today. Life is good today. Adios and bye, Uncle Nils. Yeah, I'm leaving GA.
So who guides your homeowners or condominium association? Can you rely upon them to be responsive and knowledgeable? Look to Morris Management to be invested in your community. Morris Management specializes in homeowners and condominium associations, so they've tackled many of the challenges you face. The professional, highly qualified association management team at Morris Management share their collective experience to find solutions that best fit your community's needs. To find out more, visit their website, morrismanagement.com. That's morrismanagement.com, or call them at 866-341-9568. That's 866-341-9568.
Fall maintenance is an essential element in preventing property damage during the upcoming winter months. Recommended maintenance items include gutters, downspouts, water spigots, and drain locations. McLeod Construction specializes in working with condo and homeowner associations throughout the year to maintain and repair their buildings when needed. From water damage to building envelope repairs, McLeod Construction's carpenters are here to help. We welcome you to give us a call at 206-545-7837 or visit us on the web at mcleodconstruction.com. That's spelled M-C-L-E-O-D construction.com. McLeod Construction, building relationships one project at a time.
Protecting the assets of your condominium or homeowners association is one of the primary responsibilities of the board of directors to help design and implement an insurance and risk management program for your association. Contact the experts in the Condo Assure division of Hub International, one of the largest brokers in the world. Their success in lowering the costs of risk in the industry is second to none. Call Hub International today at 425-489-4500. That's Hub International at 425-489-4500. And be sure and let them know you heard about it on Condo and HOA Buzz.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Mixing it up a little bit on the bumper music. Welcome back to Condo and HOA Buzz with Captain Kirk, Lieutenant Dan. I'm flying solo as Duncan is out flying the Enterprise down in California, getting his airplane back to its home port. That's okay, because I've got Eric, my engineer and producer extraordinaire. Eric?
Yes, we may not be getting quite as much sunshine as Captain Kirk just now, but that's all right.
Yeah, and you can check out his tan, I'm sure, on our Facebook, Condo and HOA Buzz at Facebook. We got some photos there of his trip down under over the holidays. Looking good there. Well, I'd encourage the listeners, if you missed the previous segments here earlier, that you go into the archives of KKNW1150AM.com and archives, because Donna DiMaggio-Berger, our guest from Florida, a true industry expert. She's been doing this for a while, but one of the pioneers on the technology and social media. So if you missed earlier segments, once again, I encourage you to check that out. But now we have another guest. One of my partners at Barker Martin, Jeremy Stillwell, who's a reoccurring guest slash co-host. Jeremy, are you still there?
I am.
Well, welcome. Appreciate you coming on board here the last 15 minutes or so of the show. Wanted to do a segment today's show with you to discuss Ukiahua. Things are heating up down in Olympia. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're seeing active litigation, or not active litigation.
Hopefully
but
not yet.
Active legislation on Ukiahua, the Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act, and the proposed Washington version of that model act.
Well, we've talked about it a little bit on the show, a little bit more detail. I know when last time you were actually here in studio, we talked about it, I think, before the end of the year when we were saying what we expected coming down the pike. And since your appearance here on the show, the bill actually was dropped, and now, as you say, we're in the middle of it, or the legislators and yourself and CAI's Legislative Action Committee and such. But before we get into the details, or before you provide an update, for those listeners that may not have heard earlier shows or may not be completely up to speed of what Ukiahua is, maybe if you can explain what it is and why it's important?
Sure. Well, Ukiahua is a uniform act, which means that it's based on a model act that is done by the Uniform Law Commission. It's put together by a committee of the Uniform Law Commission. And these committees of the Uniform Law Commission create model acts that different states can then take and use to base legislation and laws within that state on the model act, which is helpful to lawyers and to everyone that these laws apply to. When you have some uniformity throughout the states, it helps give us better guidance on how courts are going to interpret things and how they're going to be applied to the end user, which is, in this case, homeowners in the state of Washington.
And I would think our state in particular would benefit from that because we have such a disparity in the statutes between homeowner associations such as the single-family homes and townhomes and the Condominium Association Act. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And if you just look at the body of law in general, it's a relatively new body of law as compared to others. So you don't have as many court decisions and kind of base common law to rely on. So it's, and as we all know, homeowners associations, community associations, they are creatures of statute. So what they are and what they can do really comes down to what's on paper in the laws of your state.
Do you know, Jeremy, off the top of your head, or if you're aware, how many states have actually adopted a Ukiah type act?
I don't recall off the top of my head. It's a handful. There are several that have. We certainly would not be the first.
Okay. So what is the latest status update? Where is the bill in the process here of the sausage making down in Olympia?
Well, to my knowledge, it hasn't been assigned to a committee yet, but the legislation has been drafted, and their input is being given by different stakeholders and interest groups. So it's kind of in that initial drafting stage. The initial proposals have been put out, and comments are being collected at this point.
How many pages is the actual bill at this point?
I'm not sure. I haven't actually counted pages, but if you want to look at it, you take the Condo Act. It's similar in length to the entire Condo Act, with a little bit longer. I think the bill was something like 50 pages long or something.
Okay, so it's extensive, but not crazy large then. Not too complicated. And you mentioned stakeholders, without necessarily, or if you want to name, you know, individual organizations or such. But who would you characterize as? I mean, obviously you've got homeowners themselves, or any types of groups that represent homeowners. You've got developers. You know, who might be some other stakeholders that are getting involved in the process?
Well, you've named two significant stakeholders there, but then the lending industry is also a significant stakeholder or interest group that's interested in what we do in terms of our laws, because the assessments and the lien priorities that any association gets, and if a unit is foreclosed or if action is taken to foreclose the unit, those liens do impact the lending industry. Insurance industry is another obvious, not only from their involvement with the developer side of things, but also they are asked to write insurance policies for these community associations. So they're obviously interested in how these new laws might impact their business.
So up to this point, before the bill gets dropped and actually, you know, formalized in the legislative or in the legislature for this year, do those groups, is there any opportunity or avenue for those groups to come together, you know, pre-drop to start negotiating, or does that just happen after the fact?
That has actually already happened. There's been a drafting committee that's been in place for several years now, and they sought input, and as you know, but I'll share with the listeners, I'm a member of the Washington State Community Association Institute Legislative Action Committee. That's a mouthful, but we call ourselves the LAC, the Legislative Action Committee. We have also sought input from people in those various stakeholders to get input and guidance on how we can make the bill better.
Now, you mentioned this committee work has been going on for a few years. Are you aware of anything that's similar in the past, at least in your memory, with respect to HOAs, or is this pretty much the biggest deal that we found probably since the Condo Act?
Well, this seems to have more legs than anything, but there have been attempts in the past. There was a very big undertaking a few years ago to try to redo and rewrite the HOA Act and make significant changes to that. A lot of work was put into that, and in the end, we didn't get any new laws out of it. I wouldn't say the work was wasted, because I'm sure that work has impacted and laid some groundwork for what's going on now. But and then even prior to taking up Ukiah, there have been moves to maybe revise or update the Condo Act. I think the culmination of those separate actions, looking at the HOA Act and the Condo Act, laid some groundwork for what we're looking at now, which is Ukiah One Act to govern all community associations in Washington.
You're listening to Condo and HOA Buzz with Duncan and Dan, and this afternoon we've got Jeremy Stillwell, partner with Barker Martin, former co-chair of the CAI Legislative Action Committee, a current committee member, and an integral part of the review of the bill that's been dropped down in Olympia, the Ukiah, or Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act. And as Jeremy just mentioned, a work in progress for many years. Several stakeholders, including developers and contractors, homeowners, lenders, insurance providers, a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders involved in the process. So we talk about stakeholders, Jeremy. What about the individual homeowners? What's their role in the process, and how do legislators actually, you know, weigh their testimony if a homeowner were to come down to Olympia?
You know, my experience is that legislators do listen to constituents. They absolutely do. They want to hear and get that input from constituents. It's it drives it home. You know, an attorney can go and talk about what problems this is going to create or what the benefits of a certain law are, but when the homeowner, like I said earlier, the end user, when they convey their story and how it's impacting them on a personal level, I think that resonates with at least the legislators that I've been dealing with over the past years, and it's meaningful to them.
So, having said that, what can a homeowner do? What you know, website can they check, or what group can they contact if they're interested in weighing in, if, you know, reviewing the document, and if wanting to testify? Do they have an opportunity? Do they have to be asked? How does that work for the homeowners listening out there?
Well, the legislator does have a pretty user-friendly website that you can find bills and you can peruse those yourself, and you can, you know, find out when hearing date is set or when hearings are going to occur. Those can get set with pretty short notice sometimes, so you have to kind of check often and be on top of it. But in addition, the LAC, we intend to be posting information about when things occur as well on Washington State Community Association's website.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good conduit then for the homeowners, as you mentioned, the Washington State CAI website. And I'm sure the LAC at the appropriate time would be soliciting some input. So stay tuned out there for all things related to Ukiah. Jeremy, greatly appreciate you joining the show and coming back as a recurring guest/co-host. Thank you much for your time.
My pleasure. Always glad to join.
All right. I'll see you back in the office tomorrow.
Thanks, Dan.
You listen to Condo and HOA Buzz. We'll be right back to close out the show after this one-minute break.
Your association members take tremendous pride in their communities, and you can help them maintain that pride with custom financing through Mutual of Omaha Bank, a lending expert that's worked with thousands of community associations. Whether you want to purchase real estate or equipment or make repairs to common areas, Mutual of Omaha Bank can meet your needs with a team of dedicated local professionals. Call Chris Giametti today at 206-650-1368. That's 206-650-1368. Mutual of Omaha Bank. Member FDIC.
Responsive. Focused. Proven. At Barker Martin, these are not just words. They represent our firm's culture. Barker Martin is a full-service condominium and homeowner association law firm. Our lawyers and staff are dedicated to providing responsive, efficient, and effective legal representation for our association clients. You can reach us at 206-381-9806 or on the web at barkermartin.com.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Wrapping things up here on this Wednesday late afternoon, early evening. Condo and HOA Buzz. Lieutenant Dan here. Flying solo, though Eric's very ably been with me all afternoon. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate your keyboard extraordinaire there.
My pleasure. So that wasn't me playing the keyboard on that tube song, but I wish I could play that well.
Well, I'm sure if you practice, if you weren't so busy doing things like picking up bumper music for us, you might have some more time for that. But thank you much. So I had a great show. Really appreciate Donna DiMaggio-Berger joining us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and my partner Jeremy Stillwell from his Seattle office, a little bit closer, but good information there on UKIOWA, the Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act, and Donna talking about social media and technology and education, one of the industry experts here in the country. So we're signing off for the week, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention one more time the Seahawks, and what an incredible gift they've given to this community for 2 years now as they head off to Glendale, Arizona next weekend. Well, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend on the Super Bowl. Incredible, entertaining run so far, and of course, we're going to wish them the best of luck. But on a bigger issue, I've used the Seahawks' last year's run as an example of really bringing the community together and the greater community, whether it's Seattle or the Puget Sound or Washington State or even the country, in the sense of bringing fans together. And I like to use that as, once again, as an example. As we live within our neighborhood communities, it's often easy to find areas of divisiveness and areas where we can strive to break us apart. But when you look, there's, I think, opportunities there to bring us together. So I think the Seahawks are just one example of that brings the community together. So if you're within your neighborhood or within your board of directors or within your community and there's some opportunity to come together, in fact, that was my prediction for 2015 last week's show at Duncan, that I thought the trend for 2015 is going to be community building. So we'll stick with the Seahawks, let them build some more in a week and a half of the Super Bowl. So thanks everyone for listening to another edition of Condo and HOA Buzz. We'll be back next week with Duncan calling in from San Francisco. Thanks all.
The content of Condo and HOA Buzz is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute legal advice to any listener, guest, or other party on any subject. Transmission and or receipt of this information does not constitute an attorney-client relationship between the sender and receiver. Recipients of this information should not act upon any information contained on this radio program without seeking legal advice from a licensed attorney upon a full opportunity to disclose all materials, facts, and questions.